This week on the Media Corps Minute podcast, I sit down with Patrick Elmore, the president of business development at Infinite Recycled Technologies. Guys, this is a good one. We dive into a little bit of Pat's story, but a lot about the growth that they've seen over the years. We actually had Jeremiah on 4 years ago, I think it was, and their company has grown significantly over those years. And it's super exciting to hear where their company is going and where the industry itself is going. So stay tuned for this one. Pat, how you doing today?
Fantastic.
Doing good. Doing good. I'm glad that we finally got you on here. We've been trying for a bit.
It's been a little bit of a shot trying. I agree.
You've been busy though.
Yep. Growing, moving, shaking.
Stuff going on. I like it. Well, hey, yeah. Kind of that being said, too. You know, I want to even jump into just so listeners know. You know, what is Infinite Recycled Technologies?
Sure. So Infinite is a division of Watson Recycling, which is a 150-year-old family-owned company here in southern Minnesota. This division, main focus is on glass recycling, glass and plastic. We started Infinite for the architectural glass industry.
Yep. And like where did the need come? How did it the idea come about?
Yeah. Well, that's actually a fun story too. We started recycling a lot of metal and plastics and stuff for a big glass company up the road.
Yep.
And we always ask anytime we go anywhere, it's like, what are you landfilling a lot of that you would like help finding a home for?
Yep. You're trying to take as much of the recycling and
materials as you can. Absolutely. Yeah. With our couple with the two different companies, we're able to handle a lot. So we had one customer say, you know, we throw laminated glass away every day at the tune of about 25 ton a day, which is an astronomical amount. So we're like, awesome, we'll find someone to do it. You know, so we took 3 or 4 months and Googled and looked around and talked to people in the industry, and there's nobody doing it.
Yeah.
It can't be done. So we kind of decided, well, let's look around and see how much there is. Is it just a small place in Minnesota, or is there more? And after, you know, looking out just within, you know, our area of Minnesota and Iowa and Wisconsin, we said, geez, just in this area, there's an astronomical amount, you know? So we decided, let's figure this out.
Right.
So
bring it in-house.
Yeah. Yes. Yep. Bring it in-house. Let's do it. Let's figure out how to do it. You know, it took some time. We, had a lot of scratch paper and bar napkins, and were able to grab the idea of what needs to be done and how we think it should work, and was able to get a team to be able to put our ideas together and make it into what we have now.
That's wild.
So yeah, it's great.
And we did a video project with you really early on. And we saw that first machine, and I think it's changed, right? Multiple iterations now.
Totally different. Yep. That was our first prototype.
Yep.
That's probably 3 machines ago.
Yep.
It's probably 2 to 3 times bigger than it was then.
That's crazy.
And does a lot more efficient, a lot faster. So it's,
I love that.
Changed the game.
I mean, yeah, you guys saw a need. You looked at the market, saw no one was doing it, and you jumped on it, and it's like, you know, I'm sure there's plenty of people now that see the success and go, they're kicking themselves in the butt going, why didn't we do that when we know that there was a need for it?
Yeah. You know, I've met different glass fabricator and manufacturers around the country. And, you know, the first big company that we got literally told me to my face that you can't do that. Like, no, we can. We can do this. Yeah. And they're like, nope. Like, seriously. And it was amazing.
No one can do that.
And you know, this woman is still a dear friend to this day. She's retired now, but she's like, I just love her to death.
So how many locations do you guys have right now?
So right now we have 2 in Minnesota, New York, and Florida.
Okay.
Yep.
And then plans on expanding?
Plans on expanding. We have lots of expansions coming over the next couple of years.
How has the company progressed over the years? Because like, I feel like it's a whole different company that's been growing and doing a lot more. What was some of that growth like?
Man, the growth was painful.
Yeah.
It's been a great ride. It's a dream come true, but, you know, growing was painful. Learning was, a curve. But it's been great. Every year we look back at the prior year and it's like, man, we were idiots back then. We didn't know anything about what we were doing. You know, and then each year, you know, we think, oh, we're professionals. We know everything there is.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, growth is good, and it's going to continue.
Yeah, a lot of learning.
Yes,
along the way.
Yeah, lots more and more every day. You know, our machine, like I said, we're on prototype number 3 now. It'll always stay a prototype.
Yeah,
you know, we'll always tear it down, rebuild it, and make it better every time.
I like that. So, what do you think were some of like the key factors of almost almost the speed of growth?
Of future growth?
No, current, kind of what you guys have seen. Because, it grew pretty quickly.
Yeah, so it grew pretty quickly because there's such an astronomical need. And that is going to continue to grow even more because building codes are changing quite a bit. Okay. And that requires new glass. So, you know, building codes around New York, those building codes are changing to bird-friendly glass, which is a huge deal. Now you get somewhere down in Florida and Miami, those building codes are changing because everyone has to switch to safety glass, you know, hurricane-proof glass. So the building codes change at a rapid pace to make everybody safe. Mm-hmm. So then there's lots of retrofits, lots of new glass being made for buildings that have been around for 100 years.
Yeah.
And having to switch that out. So
now they have to swap it out.
Yep. Yep. So there's more and more demand for new glass. There's more demand to get a recycled content back into that glass being made.
And are they, a lot of the companies, the building owners, you know, people like that, that are doing these retrofits, are they trying to reuse as much of the current glass as they can just in different ways, or how does that work?
So everybody loves that idea, right? That's our ultimate dream and our ultimate goal. But the problem in there is when you float glass, you can't just take any old broken glass. It's got to be somewhat specific. It's got to be 100% clean. Mm. A small contaminant can throw hundreds of thousands of dollars into repairing a float plant and shut them down for an unknown amount of time.
Yeah.
So it's very hard to get it into new glass. So you got to be very specific. There's quite a bit of the glass we recycle is able to go into new glass,
okay,
but not all of it. So yep. We have to quality control is huge, separation is huge, and keeping different warehouses set aside for what can be sent where.
I like that.
But
what is a float plant, by the way? I heard you use that.
Sure.
I'm like, what?
So
I've got a lot of different pictures going in my head. I'm like, I don't know what that is.
Glass floating in a lake. yeah, in fact, that was something I've had to Google once before too. So when glass is made, when all these virgin materials are collected and put together, it floats the glass. And the glass sheets are made floating across this liquid glass.
Really?
And then cooled down at a specific rate to gauge thickness and width and stuff like that. Yeah.
Interesting.
So a float plant, so in the glass industry, it's your float plant that makes the glass out of the virgin materials. And then your fabricators, they will take the floated glass and laminate it or insulate it or coat it or, you know, whatever their next process is.
Interesting.
And then it'll go to a glazer and to install it.
I like that.
Yeah. And then a demo crew to take it out and give it to us.
Yeah. And then we start again.
And then it's the cycle that goes over and over. And that's what's so amazing and what I just love so much about glass is one of the very, very few things on earth that you can make full circle.
Yeah.
A glass bottle can be recycled an infinite amount of times
that's wild.
Breaking it, heating, melting it back down and putting it back, you know.
A lot of resources can't fully do that.
No, I mean, the two that I know of are aluminum and glass.
Mm-hmm.
You know, most every other type of metal is just X amount of uses.
And so is wood, right? Wood kind of just breaks down.
Yeah, I mean, wood, once you get it, I mean, you got like paper bags and toilet paper, and after toilet paper, there's no recycling at that point. So, but yeah, very, very limited.
Yeah, that's crazy.
So,
So I want to kind of switch up a little bit here, and I want to hear more about kind of your background, how you grew up, and sure. what that looked like, yeah, for your business journey.
Sure. I mean, I think since I was a little kid, I've always been in some kind of sales.
Yeah.
You know, for everything from, I remember as a kid working summers for my dad's buddy that did door-to-door seafood sales.
Okay.
So we would travel around the lakes of Minnesota, and they did, you know, and then we grew up in Moorhead, so it was the Detroit Lakes area that we, you know, we'd go cabin to cabin to cabin in the summer times and sell a whole truck of seafood every day. And
that's great.
So I just have always been in some kind of sales. As I got older, it was selling something different, and you know, and after high school and stuff, it was selling cars, or you know, I did many years where I sold RVs and power sports. Mm-hmm. And so I think pretty much my whole life I've been selling something. Sold my wife myself so she would convince her, use my salesmanship to convince her to marry me. And been holding on to that sale for a while.
So before Infinite, what was been the most favorite thing that you've sold? Ooh. As a kind of like a career?
Probably RVs.
Really?
Yeah, loved it. RV sales was fun. I'm a big camper. Okay. So I've been camping for 30 years or so. I mean, I've always been big into camping. So when I got the chance to actually sell RVs and then learn about all the different ones and use them, and man, that was awesome. That's probably cool. my next favorite job other than what I'm doing now that I've ever had.
This is the favorite, though.
This is a favorite. It's my dream job. Every day it comes true.
You were telling me one time that people say once you get into the glass industry that you don't leave it.
That's true.
You got to tell me what's that all about there.
You know, I don't know the full background behind it. I've been told that by people that have been in the glass industry for 30, 40 years. They've said the same thing. They got in when they were in their 20s and never left till they retired. So I don't know a lot about it, but it's such a great industry. Mm-hmm. The people that we interact with at conferences and in trade shows, and it's truly an amazing group of people. I think that's what keeps people in it.
Yeah.
Yep. The interaction.
Because it's a big industry, right? But it's kind of niche to.
Yeah.
How many people do it? But I feel like it's still like a large.
It's a massive industry. I would have never, you know, if you would have come to me in 2019 and said, hey, this glass industry is awesome. It's just really cool. You should get into it. And I'm like, glass, like beer bottles, or you know, what do you mean, glass industry? And then the glass industry is huge. It's not just beer bottles or container glass. It's skyscrapers. It's mm-hmm. you know, it's your picture frames. I mean, the glass is, there's so much of it.
Yeah,
it's such a massive industry, and it's so fun.
Yeah. So for you guys, you know, as Infinite, what do you kind of focus on when you're kind of out and about working with companies and trying to recycle their glass? I mean, do you have kind of industries, or not industries, but like maybe size companies or people that you sure. kind of go after and target?
So Infinite's, we base our company on architectural glass.
Okay.
So the building glass, your storefronts, your skyscrapers and stuff like that. We don't deal with the container glass and stuff like that. There's lots of really good recyclers across the U.S. that do that. So we keep our niche. Mm-hmm. In our niche, our main focus is insulated glass and laminated glass,
yep.
which is our machine that we invented to delaminate. But what we look for usually, we'll take anything from your small lock and key window installer to the big manufacturers making it, from the float plants and fabricators. That's generally where you get the largest volumes. Mm. So obviously we want to focus on them because they do have such a large volume. Yep. If we put not enough focus on them, then those large volumes are going to continue to go to the landfill.
Right.
So we do try to stick there. We're open to everybody and everything.
Yeah. How many people like in the country do what you guys do? or have the capabilities.
Sure. Well, there's one other company in the country.
Wow.
That can do what we do. We are one of five in the world.
That's wild.
That are able to delaminate.
Yeah.
Of course, you can always do the caveman style to recycle laminated glass. If you stack it up in a pile outside, take a loader and flip it over once a week for 3 or 4 months, it'll eventually just fall off. But at that point, you've kind of ruined the inner layer from further recycling.
Yeah.
And then you're just capturing the glass and stuff. But with our machine, we're able to separate
you split
that.
Both, right? You recycle both.
Right? That's right. That's right. Yep. We recycle, all of it, from the stainless steel spacers to both sheets of glass, the inner layer that's in between the laminate. We recycle pretty much 98% of a window.
Yeah. So if you look at the country, just the U.S., like how much capacity is there to continue to grow? How much stuff is still being put in landfills?
Oh, it's a hurtful number. But on average right now, it's about 12 million ton a year of glass go to the landfill, just in the United States.
Dang.
So it's a huge number. So the opportunity to grow and expand and capture more is endless. I don't think 100 companies could capture all of it. So we do our best to get as much as we can.
And are most places, open to having you guys recycle it versus them just going, no, we're just going to landfill this?
Yeah, absolutely. Like that's what I was saying about that woman is that retired. She had been looking at that time. She'd been looking for 20 years.
Oh my goodness.
To find someone to recycle this glass, but there was nobody to do it before us. What was the first part of that question?
Just like how it's almost like received is.
Yeah,
you know, you come in. I don't know how it all costs and stuff like that.
Yeah,
but. How receptive are they to use you over just like, oh, no, we're going to landfill all
this? Yeah, no, that's the best part of it. We could go into any glass manufacturer, fabricator, anything like that in the U.S. and tell them what we're here to do. And they love it. I mean, who doesn't want to recycle their glass, something that's such an amazing product? Mm-hmm. It's receptive, very awesome. Everybody wants to do it. Very seldom have I had anybody not want to do it.
Right.
And that has probably changed from then to now. It was a little bit more of a charge, right? Yep. We were new. We spent millions developing in this machine, and we had to have a charge for it. We had to recoup some money. We had to pay our employees. We had to buy trucks and all this. So there was a charge for it. See, so I ran into that where someone wasn't willing to pay a dollar more than what they paid to landfill it.
Yeah.
At that point, we were a little bit more. That ball game has changed dramatically now.
Interesting.
With our machine being able to process a large number more than it was then, and how efficient we are, we were able to get rid of a lot of these charges and everything like that to help grow. Yeah.
So it's no different now, really, cost wise, going from you to landfills.
No, not at all.
So I bet everyone's excited about
it. Yeah, we're cheaper than every landfill out there. Absolutely.
Huh.
Yep. So they love it.
How do you continue to grow and scale then with that big of a need?
We save up every penny we can from the glass coming in and continuing to invest it in the next location. It all starts with friendship, out that I have and that I've made over the few years in the glass industry and learning where these big focus areas are of glass, where there's more than just, one person, where there's 7 or 8 or 10 or 15 glass fabricators or manufacturers. So we do a lot of research, find those areas and then see what kind of money we can scrounge up to start the next one.
So, dang.
Yeah.
That's wild. I suppose, you guys are probably, excited to just keep growing, but it's like, how do we one, do this at a sustainable rate? But it's like, like you said, everything takes money. So it's like, we're eager to do this stuff, but we got to like do it in chunks and in steps.
Yeah. And we've learned from mistakes. You know, when we opened our second location, we weren't ready. Mm-hmm. We decided we were just going to do it. Yeah. We were going to jump in with both feet and we were going to, you know, just do little by little until we got there. And that's not the way to do it.
Yeah.
You need to be more prepared.
Yep.
And we learned real fast.
It probably taught you quite a bit though.
It really did. Yep. We learned a lot about filing for better permits through the states and through the counties and the cities and, you know, a little bit more than we'd known before.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's...
I don't think it's a bad thing though to bite off more than you can chew right away, because that's where you're going to really figure out what you're made of and
yeah. You
know, make the mistakes to go, now we're not going to ever do that again. And
yep.
But we wouldn't have known that, you know.
It's not a bad thing if you like gray hair. You know, the stress is real and, you know, but you know, it's great to learn.
Yeah.
You know, I still every day at my young age, I still learn every day more and more stuff, what not to do. Very rarely do I learn what to do. It's just mostly learning what not to do.
You could write a book, just what not
to do. That's right. That's right.
That's right. So I want to talk a little bit about, you know, I feel like the other thing that's been growing and continuing to grow is just, you know, this green initiative, the environment, you know, things like that. How has that played into your industry as you guys continue to grow?
Yeah. You know, being the green initiatives and the sustainability is huge in the industry.
Was it always?
You know, I guess it's hard to say always because we haven't been in the industry that long. But I know from how much more it is now compared to when we started the company in 2020, it's astronomical.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the simple things like the glass in your window at home now, it's a lot of it's solar. You can't tell, but this glass window in your house is collecting energy to power your house.
That's crazy.
So it's huge, and there's not as many companies right now making that. It's still pretty new in the industry, but it's amazing. I mean, look at solar panels made out of glass. That's floated glass. In fact, I did get to tour last week a solar panel float glass plant. So that was super awesome. It's the recycling. By recycling the glass, you know, these float plants and stuff, they get to use like 35% less emissions versus virgin material. Their ovens cook at a lower temperature because it's easier to remelt glass than it is to remelt the virgin materials. So, I mean, what they're saving in that is huge, and that's what they want. Same as whether it's going into new glass or it's going into fiberglass. They want to use more and more of recycled glass, which is called cullet. So everybody wants to use more because it's a little cheaper to get. Their ovens and equipment last longer, and it's just less carbon going into the atmosphere. So it's great. Different glasses with different solar, whether it's collecting energy or glass that's, you know, blocking heat coming in and holding the heat in, or vice versa for the different temperatures.
Like the smart glass now that's changing tint and
same thing. As it gets hotter outside, you know, it tints your windows automatically. I've seen them with a flip of a light switch on a wall to being able to change it on an iPad. Watch that glass just in person, just shade. Yeah, it's really, really, really great. Yeah. That's what makes it such a great industry.
With the with the cullet, you know, you guys, when we went and we were shooting that video, you guys were just handfuls of glass, and I'm like immediately like, what the heck are you doing? You know, that's going to cut the crap out of your hand or something like that. And you're just playing with it like it's like sand. And
yep.
So I thought that was just a funny thing because I was like, what is going on here? And, and then we did it and I was okay, it's not actually sharp.
And that was actually a great part of our machine and the design of it is that when basically we're taking large sheets of glass and turning it back to sand.
Mm-hmm.
But by the machine design, it's able to kind of round up everything. Yeah. So it's not leaving shards. You know, giving tours like with you, it's awesome. We'll grab a handful and we'll just squeeze it in our fist as hard as we can and show people like, this is great. Yeah. Look at this. This is not. That was a neat.
Yeah, I like the
neat part of it.
So with the one thing that I've seen a couple times now, and I think we at least have to chat about it, is the flat trick. You got to tell me what that is, because I've seen you at the trade shows, and I've seen a lot of it going on, and I feel like certain people in the industry already know what that is.
Yeah, well, flat trick started out as an accident, and he just he got to be more popular than I am, so which is great, and there's lots of good stories around this, but Andrew Herring, the ultimate glass nerd in the industry, did a little promotion where he rented a big van and he was driving, you know, five people who wanted to do this from LA to Las Vegas for the glass show. Well, I'm like, I'm in.
Oh, yeah.
This crew is going to be great. It's going to be a party the whole time. I'm in. Well, it turns out that something come up and I wasn't able to make the van. So I said, you know, in my place, how about we send a cardboard cutout?
Yep.
And he's like, yeah, that's great. He's like, another guy was jumping on board and he wound up, he wasn't able to make it. And then at the very last minute, he was able to make it. So he was in the van with his cardboard cutout, which is awesome. The whole trip from LA to Las Vegas, they stopped along the way and did these little stunts and stuff. And I got sent a video where my buddy Carl carrying flat trick through the desert. It just took off at that. And then what he does social media wise is next to none. I mean, he's amazing. He's gifted. But that's how it started. And then I just had flat trick set up at our trade show booth the rest of that trade show, you know, after the drive, and people were like, oh my God, there's Patrick, you know. It was like, cool. And like, you know, later, a couple days later, I was walking through the Paris Hotel in Vegas, and I was carrying Flatrick back to my room, and I legitimately had people like yell and point out, there's Flatrick. Not like, hey, there's Patrick and his cutout. It's like, no, there's Flatrick. And it's been great. It's been a few years now, and we're just in the middle of planning the next glass build and the next Flatrick and what he's going to do and what he's going to wear this time. But it seems like people are expecting it.
That's great.
I've carried him around at different glass shows, and I've had people come up and want to take their picture with Flatrick. And after they're standing there, then they notice that I'm actually the 3D version of the cutout. I mean, all they notice is Flatrick and nothing about me. So it's, he got.
You're actually the guy.
Yeah, I've heard that. It's like, oh, wait, is this actually you? And I'm like, yeah, that's him.
That's so funny.
So yeah, it's just grown. We've added, the second year we got Carl back. To join Flatrick in it. Carl was the other cardboard cutout. Just this past year, we added a third person, which is Flat Stanley. My good buddy Stanley Yee from Dow Chemical was able to jump in. And
that's hilarious.
The glass build is the Super Bowl of the glass industry for trade shows. And so we do fun events with with the cutouts, you know. Absolutely. Each year we do a different one, dressed up as a different way. It was cowboys last year, and this year everyone will have to watch out and see what they're going to be stuff. It's going to be great.
That's a great just marketing and PR thing too. Mm-hmm. It's just like,
yeah,
an accident that took off, and then just run with it. And
exactly. Yep. Fantastic. If it wasn't for my buddy Andrew, it would have never taken off. Mm-hmm. I'd still be me. Less popular.
So do you have to do, in your role, a lot of traveling? Are you kind of going all over the place, or what does that look like?
Yeah.
You're kind of day to day.
Right. No, I do a lot of traveling. We do a lot of conferences, a lot of shows, and meet with a lot of customers because of what we're doing and the lack of other recyclers or enough recyclers. We have to travel out to meet a lot of new customers all over the U.S. And find the logistics way to get them back.
Yep.
So yeah, I'm I've been up to where I was flying, you know, 2-3 times a month. But I don't know if I've ever been a full month without being in an airport.
That's wild.
So, yeah, it.
Do you like traveling though?
I do.
Yeah.
I do enjoy seeing, I have, a list of my favorite airports now and, you know, my more preferred chain of hotels. And, the only thing that keeps me from wanting to travel so much is my little girls. You know, I've got two little girls at home and a wife, and, you know, a day without them is, it's not fun.
Right.
They're amazing to be around. So
how has kind of family changed your work dynamic, you know, your motivation, things like that?
Yeah. You know, it's great. Being in this industry, other than the traveling part of it, I'm actually home considerably more than I have been in the past.
Yep.
You know, when you're in sales, whether it's a car, boat, or camper or something like that, and you're selling fun, you got to work a lot. You know, you're there till 7-8 o'clock every night. You're there every weekend. So now, with the flexibility of my position and the company and stuff like that, I'm able to be home. You know, be home early, work from home on days that I need to, and spend that extra time. I got weekends off to go camping with the family. Yep. So work and family life is great. You know, I've got an hour drive each way to and from work. So that hour drive home, you know, usually is enough time to get work away. So when I get home, you know, I'm not bringing work home all the time. I can enjoy being with the family.
I like those hour drives. It's a good music. It's a good podcast. A good
absolutely.
Book. Good, you know. It's just I really enjoy those when I do.
Right. It's good. It you know, my way to work, I use that hour making phone calls every day.
Wow.
So a little less radio listening then, but important. You know, we're central time zone, so we got the East Coast, and we've got a couple locations all up and down the East Coast, so it gets me time right away in the morning to get out to them and see what's going on. But yeah, the drive home is nice to decompress and listen to a good podcast.
Yeah, I like
it. Like this one.
Yep. So not to take it back a little bit, but you know, with all the traveling, do you ever rent cool cars when you're traveling?
We do. We've had to cut back because one of our yearly meetings, when the expense report came out on these nice cars, we had to cut back considerably. But you know, we've rented everything from almost every model of Porsche you can get to Maseratis and Jaguars and, if some people like them, Cadillacs, and, you know, just, quite a huge variety of fun sports cars and Corvettes and Camaros and Mustangs. And you definitely learn what a real sports car is when you get behind the wheel of a nice 911 Porsche.
What's one of the favorites?
911 Porsche, hands down.
Hands down.
Hands down. There's no vehicle that I've ever rented or driven that can compare to a 911. They're small, they're fast, they're so responsive. I mean, it's truly an amazing feeling.
That's what I've heard, but I don't think I'd ever fit. So.
Yeah, they make them pretty roomy nowadays. just go with the Panamera. I tell you what, that Panamera, 0-60 in 2.6 seconds, you can't beat it.
So when are you getting yours?
You know, I've had a couple, not the 911, of course, but, you know, I've had a couple Porsche already, and they're great.
When's the 911 coming, though?
We'll see how the next year goes.
So the glass industry keeps
going. I've got to sling some more glass, you know, afford one of those. A good buddy of mine is in the glass industry, and he's got two of them in his driveway. He's got a 911 and a Cayenne. Great. So
he goes out of his way to send
He's who I look up to. Oh, he does. Yep, he does. Yep. He sent me some photos.
Hey, I'm taking this one today.
Driving the Porsche today, Pat. It's like, great. Thanks, buddy.
One of the things that I kind of wanted to chat about too is just like, we like to talk about technology and how technology is changing a lot of different industries, and some for the good, some for the worst. For you guys in the glass industry, how do you think technology is shaping it? Is it better? Is it worse? What does that look like?
You know, for us, technology is helping. It's definitely the way of the future. We use technology every day, designing whether it's new pieces of the machine or the next machine. You know, another part of our company is kind of inventing new recycling machines for different industries. So we, you know, use a lot of technology there. As we process our glass and stuff, we have to use technology to sample the glass and do a full analysis on it to make sure that it's ready to be sent out. And then you get this AI, right? You know, it's made it so much easier for me to write a paper or you know, set up the, you know, the next meeting document. And I tell you what, I'm behind on it. I'm still learning, but it's amazing.
I feel like a lot of people are behind on it.
Yeah, yeah. I've taken a couple online classes on how to use, like, the ChatGPT and everything like that, and it's really neat.
I think it's a lot more powerful than most people understand and realize.
Yeah.
Even me being one of them, you know, it's just like, I feel like we just scratched the surface with, like, what we could do with it. And, you know, like, you hear it and people are like, this is going to rival the internet. Like, when the internet first came out and how that changed everything, like, AI is going to rival that change.
When AOL came out, I ran into someone here about a month ago that still had an AOL email.
Oh my goodness!
I didn't think that was possible, but
how do you still log in?
I don't know. It's. I wanted to ask, but I didn't want to. You know, I don't want to make them feel bad for having AOL.
Like, let's get you on something else. That's really funny. What do you think are some of the things that are falling behind in the glass industry? You know, what needs to speed up, and just things like that.
Recycling. Mm-hmm. It's a major problem.
Okay.
And it's not so much of the companies not wanting to do it. Mm-hmm. It's the education behind it.
Okay.
It's two things. It's the education behind it, and it's logistics, because logistics every day is our biggest expense and our biggest nightmare.
Yeah.
So getting glass, something as heavy as glass, to move around is really tough. But the education, because we are still a very new company, and no matter how much Flatrick is out there or myself promoting it and letting people know, the education behind it is very minimal. So by explaining more to people or finding ways to create the education behind it. It's a game changer then. Just giving the, letting people know that it can be done, it should be done, why it should be done, and then finding out how to get it done.
So how do you continue to educate more people then? You know, how do you reach the masses?
So I do some social media. I'm not an Instagrammer or anything like that, but I do a lot of LinkedIn.
Yep.
And it seems like the glass industry, if you're in the glass industry, you're on LinkedIn. It's everyone's Facebook. Yep. It's crazy. And I meet people who don't have Facebook or Instagram, but they are, you, every time you see them, they're on their phone on LinkedIn, and it's awesome. So I do try to post as much as possible on LinkedIn, things, creating awareness, letting people know, sending out some emails, and talking to a lot of people at conferences and stuff that we go to. We've spoken at quite a few conferences, which creates that awareness. We're just getting ready to publish a second recyclability paper in the glass industry. That I've been part of both of those, and that's helping quite a bit. It's got to start with, at a young age. If I start making some TikToks on glass recycling, or maybe get into the Instagram or the Snap, whatever it is, maybe I can capture that younger crowd that way too. Not a lot of young people on LinkedIn, but
I feel like LinkedIn's growing though. It's You know, it used to be just the spot where you go and look for work, for jobs and say that you're hiring. And whatever they did, you know, and this is 5 years ago probably plus, is they really started making it more of a like a social media platform.
Yeah.
They tried to adapt that, you know, and I always use like the phrase, the business Facebook, you know, almost.
Yeah,
and
that's exactly what it is.
And it's cool because more people are adapting that. They're not only on it now, but they're engaging.
Yep.
They're, you know, we talk to a ton of people in the construction industry too, and they're like, it's one of my biggest you know ways that we get business now is literally LinkedIn.
Yeah.
Why? Because all of our customers are on it.
Yep.
You know, and for you guys, you know, everybody in your industry is on it in different, you know, ways and capacities, but you can reach people.
Yeah.
In fact, you can find the right person.
Absolutely.
Connect with them, meet with them. So it's cool to see how I think that's just going to keep getting more and more popular.
Yeah, I agree.
And then how do you leverage it? How do you stand out when it gets more and more popular and stuff
like that? Well, see, that's the thing. That's the key. And, you know, I got a buddy, Keith Daubman, down in Naples, Florida. And he's the one that inspired me to do – this is non-directly, too. This is before I even met the guy and become friends with him. Just watching his videos all the time, I started following him. And I was like, man, these videos are great. This guy is awesome. Mm-hmm. And then watching him grow and his, the way he posts and now he's, you know, into the podcast and stuff. But it's like, dude, you own social media.
Yeah.
You are phenomenal at it. And I remember meeting him for the first time. I literally went up and told him, I was like, Keith Daubman, I'm Patrick Elmore. You know, I'm like your biggest fan. It's like, I really look up to you. And he's probably thinking, God, who is this guy? Kind of embarrassed to say that now, but you know, we've been friends for a little while now, and you know, we recycle all of their glass for his companies all around Florida, and you know, I still love watching his videos, and now he's posting like multiple a day. I was like,
wow,
it's amazing. This is how, I don't know how he gets anything done because I see how many videos. He's like, I can't do it myself. Teach me the way. But yeah, social media is growing huge. We've used it quite a bit to get business ourselves. You know, I'll find the name of a company and that we need to talk to and do some business with. Well, you try to call this company directly and you get the gatekeeper and their main job is to make sure they get you away and hang up as quick as possible. So with LinkedIn being so awesome, you can actually type in this company and you can go through and see other people that work there and be like, okay, I need to be friends with this person because they're the one in charge of the glass recycling and the waste and stuff. So I have used it quite a bit to find different places we need to be.
It's great for sales, and it's also great for like that awareness and education.
Yeah. Yep.
You know, it's kind of the twofold of, you know, how do we directly, you know, try to connect with certain people that are going to help us, you know, basically sell. But on the flip side, how can we just build the awareness, you know, teach the industry, and then, you know, build a following from there. And that's like, hey, we want everyone to know us, you know, that kind of thing. So with logistics, you know, we've worked with a few trucking companies. I think it's an interesting industry. I feel like it's only going to increase. It feels like everyone's shipping and doing stuff right now. For you guys, you know, do you primarily do that in house, or what does that look like for you?
So primarily, yes.
Okay.
We have a large fleet of trucks.
Yep.
But if we're a trucking company, we don't have a large fleet. But for what we do, we have a pretty large fleet of trucks. On the road every day. So we generally want to use our trucks to bring everything into the building.
Yep.
To go out, we utilize rail. Mm-hmm. We do own a rather large fleet of rail cars.
Interesting.
Because it is going more all over the country in Canada, that, you know, that recycled product, we have to utilize rail. I can get five semi loads in one rail car.
Wow.
at the cost of one semi. Yeah.
Dang.
But you have to have your own trucks to bring it in. You can't bring it in rail.
You can't bring it in rail?
It just does not work. Okay. We've thought of every angle. And please, if somebody is listening and they're like, no, this is how you do it, please share, because we have thought of every angle and cannot figure out how to get, you know, a lot of broken glass and a lot of, you know, waste glass into our facility via rail. So we do everything bringing in on trucks. We do have some relationships with a couple other outside logistics company that do help us out.
So does it not make sense, like financially, like partnering with, you know, just like a third party for everything, to just go, hey, you're doing all this for us?
So it makes it a lot easier. It's okay. A million times easier if I could just hire a trucking company to do everything.
Yeah.
But it's half the cost if I have my own trucks.
Wow.
So it's a big savings to have your own trucks, savings, but yeah. You gotta wonder if then the gray hair is worth it.
Yeah. You gotta be the logistic company then.
Yeah. Yep. You know, and I stay myself away as much as possible on the logistics side of it. I leave it up to Samantha at our office, or Jeremiah. I mean, everything logistics, buying the trucks and stuff like that. That's a him gig, but
yeah.
Just what I'm involved is already just a headache.
Yeah, so, that's wild.
But it's what you have to do.
Yeah.
You know, and having the fleet of your trucks and then breaking down all the time, and you have customers waiting. Sure. And yeah, so it's, I mean, we carry brand new trucks all the time. Well, but we've had brand new trucks 2 weeks old in the shop for a month. So it's a headache. I do commend these guys who run logistics companies. Mm-hmm. And they're having fleets of 200-400 semis. I was like,
oh yeah,
you're gonna die before you're 50. I don't know how you're doing it.
So. Do you guys do anything globally, like overseas?
We do send some overseas. We don't recycle overseas.
Okay.
We've been toying with it. We've had about 8 other countries now reach out to us and said, come over here, please help us out.
Yeah.
It's enticing, and we really want to. I had a goal for a couple of years. It was like my 2-year goal was to open a new location in Germany. But the need in the U.S. is far greater than it is over there.
Yeah.
Especially Europe. I mean, they know what glass recycling is. We're a third world country to Europe's glass recycling. So it's
that's hilarious.
So we need to stay here.
I mean, it's just when you think about growth, I'm sure it's easier to grow in the States, you know, rather than,
yeah,
you know, unless you had to, but again, yeah, like you don't. So it's, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we absolutely want to be global. We want, you know, locations all over the globe. At the very least, we want, you know, the infinite technology and the machines and stuff going around the globe to be used. But
so when you look at the, you know, the next 5 years, you know, of Infinite, like what's the future like look like? What are you guys going to be doing
5 years from now? I hope we're doing what we're doing now with 10 more locations.
Yeah.
You know, 15 more locations.
Yeah.
We need to go grow. We need to expand. We know we're going to do it. And the questions are where.
Right.
Where and who's going to give us the money to do it? Yep.
But how can companies like help with that process of like expanding to new locations and stuff?
Yeah.
Like
that? Basically, just the awareness. If they know that it can be done, and you know, if they can reach out to us, we try to reach out to as many as possible. But we've been in Florida and Googled every glass company we could find in Florida for a couple of years, and all of a sudden we're finding like 10 more glass companies that are right there we never knew of, and Google didn't come up with, but word of mouth got out there, and we're like, where did you come from? Like, we've been here for 20 years.
I've been hunting here for years.
Yeah.
What's going on?
So, just creating that awareness and stuff by getting more glass and capturing more glass and getting it recycled will help us grow.
Mm-hmm.
That or anybody with an extra $20 million laying around can come invest.
Come invest.
Yeah. I'll take your money. I'll spend it. Promise. It won't be on Porsches.
Yeah.
It might be on Porsches, but.
One Porsche.
One, at least one.
Everything else.
At least one.
Yeah.
Yep.
I also like to, you know, hit on just two, because we got people of all walks, you know, life that listen to this. A lot of owners, a lot of business people, a lot of aspiring entrepreneurs. What are some of the things that in your personal journey, you know, that you've been learning? It could be here, but it could be just, you know, along the way too. Things that you've learned that you could pass on to just help people that are trying to get better and grow and, you know, things like that.
Wow. How much time do we have left? Well, I guess I should say I wish I've learned a lot, but, you know, as far as like the recycling goes, and what I didn't know to what I know now is, I mean, everything about recycling, you know, you have your reduce, reuse, recycle that you learn in school. And so minimal, and everyone, you know, does the curbside and your bins there. And what people don't know is roughly 75% of what you put in your recycling bin at home goes to the landfill anyway. Mm-hmm. Because what they don't know is if you have a jar of mayo, if you don't clean that jar and take the lid off and then put it in the bin, the municipality, they don't want to touch it. Mm-hmm. It goes in the landfill. So by everyone doing a little better job that way can truly help out the growth of recycling.
Yeah.
Just by paying more attention. I mean, we all want to recycle pizza boxes, but they won't recycle them with the layer of grease that they come in them. It's very unfortunate, but maybe use it in your burn, you know, in starting your next campfire.
Yeah. There you go.
That grease should burn great in a campfire. Yep.
Campfire
don't yeah, yeah. Yep. Clean out your ketchup bottles, you know, when you throw them in your recycle bin. But yeah, just more people talking about it and wanting to be behind it and wanting to be behind the greater good and the greener tomorrow. We do recycling because we love it and we know it's the right thing to do and we feel good about it. Didn't always feel good about going home, selling, you know, a motorhome to someone, knowing how much they overspent on it. Now I can truly say I go home every night feeling good about what I did.
Yeah.
But yeah, just more people wanting to be involved and learning to be involved.
That's going to be a huge need is the awareness. You know, I think we were talking, you know, obviously on the glass side of how uneducated people are on recycling, but I mean, you make a good point. I think in recycling in general, how uneducated everyone is.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't know that. You know, it's like that's a.
I talk to people every day. They're like, "Oh, I do all my recycling at home and everything." I was like, "Yeah, do you rinse out your bottles? No, you're not recycling. You're just separating it. It's too bad."
Yeah, I mean, it's good and bad. It's good that there's a lot of upside potential. It's just bad that it's, you know, there's not enough awareness out yet.
Well, you gotta think too. You know, when you have your curbside recycling. And this goes back to, you know, the recycling plant or the municipality or wherever it is. It's got to be sorted.
Right.
So, but you want to sort gross old ketchup bottles and stuff absolutely like that not all day? No. And they don't either. So they don't grab that out and they let that go, you know, to the end of the pile to the landfill and just grab the clean stuff for the recycling.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's terrible. But it's the way it is, and it's not a great job. I wouldn't want to do it.
Right, right.
So that's why we stick to architectural.
That's right.
Comes in on racks. It's nice.
Just lastly, too, just because I know you've had a career in sales, how do you think sales is changing just overall as time goes on? What's effective? What's not effective? What does that look like?
You know, that's great. Sales is changing all the time. Everything from buying your cars in a vending machine. Like, how awesome is that?
Yeah.
Okay, well, now we lost that sales.
Yeah.
But I do think it's different. Like, I think is different is everyone thinks they can go and sell cars. And anyone can go and accidentally sell five cars a week or five cars a month or something like that on accident. But there's two salesmen. There's people who try really hard and sell their five cars a month, and then there's people who are born to sell. And being a good salesman, it's not something you learn. It's something you're born with. It's there in your gene. So, but that is changing. Everything from, you know, doing your sales meeting in person with a good firm handshake and a high five at the end has changed to, you know, great Zoom call, click, and you're hanging out. You know, it's changed so much that, you know, in person, not saying it on a high pressure sales job, but just in person, just meeting and having that interaction and having that connection next to someone and, you know, learning a little bit more of their body language and how they're perceiving what you're actually taking. Because on Zoom calls, no one really actually, so many Zoom calls now, they don't even have their cameras on.
I hate that.
You know, I mean, I don't hate it on a bad hair day, but... You know, for the most part, yeah, I always have my camera on, and I'm always trying to be aware and attentive to what's going on. But and the Zoom calls are great too. I mean, I'm on them all day every day. But it's affecting the sales, you know. And then you have a lot of dealerships are going to their one price thing. Well, mm-hmm. you don't need a salesman anymore. You need an order taker. Mm-hmm. So you're losing that art, you know, of sales and all the, you know, sales courses and classes and everything I've taken throughout my life, so much of it just doesn't matter anymore.
Yeah.
So
a lot of it can even hurt now, I feel like.
Yeah.
You know, you look at some of the, just depends. Like if you're watching the old school guys, you know, the you know, Jordan Belfort kind of guys, just like
Glengarry, you know, Glenn Ross guy.
Yeah. Guys. Like that's not, like one, people are aware of it now, so they're looking for it.
Yeah.
But two, just immediately just wall. Like,
yeah.
And like you're that kind of guy. Yep. And like I immediately have my wall up now. Yep. And so it's interesting how it's changing. And you can really screw yourself by learning from the wrong people. And wrong
stuff. Absolutely. Any good salesman is always learning.
Yeah.
I've taken throughout my life of sales and I've learned tips from everybody. And that's what makes a good salesman. If you know that you're not the best and you can learn from anybody, I've taken tips from some of the worst salesmen I've ever met on the planet, but they did like one thing right. And I was like, that's a good little trick. I like that.
Yep.
Now, if you could put a few more tricks with it, you would really be something big. But, you know, I learn all the time and I still learn. And I still take bits and pieces from different people that I've learned and adapt it into my own way. But, you know, you're saying putting the wall up and stuff, and you know people are instantly know when they see something. My wife and I, when we shop for a new car, it's on a weekend when they're closed, and then it's on Monday me going back to the dealership, getting the car and bringing it home for my wife to test drive. She married a salesman, but she doesn't like him, so I don't know how that works out. But the art of sales is going away.
Yeah,
and it's too bad.
It's funny too, you know, a couple things that we've heard over the years is like, you know, 22 was a great year for so many companies and things like that, as you know, it was ramping up, and 23, 24 was, you know, kind of going downhill a bit. But what we're doing is like during those high times, it was just order takers. Like
it really was.
You didn't have to sell.
Right.
So now that they're, you know, they're having to, everyone's like, wow, everyone sucks at sales. Like they're terrible at this because they didn't have to try or do anything or put that extra time in, that extra energy in, that extra care in, that just didn't have to. It's just like, hey, I'm just here. I got this available. Do you want it? Because it's going
to
be gone.
Yeah, and that can contribute to a number of different things. You know, one, cell phones. You have so many kids on their cell phone all the time that they're not going out and, I mean, they're making money off TikTok.
Yep.
They're jumping on their skateboard or dancing in a video, and they don't need a real job.
Right.
So you lose it that way. You know, COVID just affected so much. You couldn't go into the dealership. You did your virtual walk around and your virtual tour of the cars. Yeah. And then, you know, like you're saying, in 22, when there was a shortage, you just needed order takers.
Yep.
So you lost so much of that and so much of that interaction and so much of that people connecting and again, having the art of sales. It's just that there's a lot of things that ruined it. Mm-hmm. You know, I got my current truck just offline. I didn't, you know.
I mean, we're educated buyers. That's the other thing that I tell people too is like, we all have our cell phone. We can all go shop the competition. We can do whatever we want to do. And I can come in and already know what I want. And it's like, I already made my decision.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. you know, so there's, you know, you lose the fun of negotiation.
Yeah.
Like I said, I was born to sell. I have it in my blood. And I truly do enjoy it. Yeah. I love to go to a dealership and negotiate on that vehicle. So much so that, you know, a lot of people that I work with, they're like, hey, Pat, I need a new truck. This is what I'm looking for. Go find me one. And I do, because I truly enjoy it, you know. You know, at work and stuff, when we need new semis and stuff, I'll put the legwork in. I'll call and negotiate. And yep. I'm not coming to look at this truck at all unless I'm getting this, you know. And in 22, you lost that.
Yeah.
Because it didn't matter. They're like, all right, cool. You don't want it? Fine. Nope. It's 10 grand over sticker. You want it? Yes or no? I have another call waiting. And that's how it was. And that's true.
It was.
You couldn't buy a vehicle for gone. 5 grand over sticker. You know, it was, you were paying more. You were saying, okay, I know you got that pre-sold. I'll give you this much more than that. Mm-hmm. But now that those chances are changing, you do have availability for vehicles and boats and stuff like that. And prices are really starting to come down quite a bit too. But, you know, so hopefully I'll get my chance again to dust off the moves a little bit. But, you know, I remember telling plenty of people, I was like, yeah, when you go in and you tell them you want this car, tell them this is the deal you want. But be ready to get up and walk away.
Yeah.
You know, because they will, you know, it's, at that point, it's a better salesman. Is it going to be you or it's going to be them?
Yeah.
You know, I said, get up and walk away. They will come chase you down. And every time they do, will. You know, I've been that guy chasing someone. No, wait, sir. Okay. How about we do this?
I just spoke to my manager.
Yeah. I spoke to my manager. He thinks we can come down like another $200. You know, you got to be able to walk away.
No.
If you truly believe, and that's just it. A good deal is not whether you got 10 grand off or 5 grand off. Mm-hmm. A good deal is however you feel about your purchase. Mm-hmm. If you felt you got a good deal, you could have overpaid by 5 grand, but if you felt like you got a good deal, you got a good deal.
Right. Yep.
So
I like it.
Well, Pat, I can talk about it.
I know this has been fun. I mean, I know we could keep going with this stuff too, but thank you again for just coming on.
Oh, absolutely.
It's been exciting watching you guys grow, and I'm excited to continue watching it grow. And I think you guys got some big stuff in the works. So
Yep, we got some big stuff coming. And you know, thanks for having me. I feel honored and blessed to be able to be a part of your growing podcast. And
Yeah.
Thanks again. I like to watch them when they come up. So
Well, sweet, Pat. Well, you have a great rest of your day, and
thanks, buddy. You too.
And as always, thank you so much for tuning in this week. We appreciate your listening so much. If you got any value from this or enjoyed it, remember to share it out. We're trying to continue building a community and bringing on cool people. So we'll see you on the next one.